Welcome to our first week in review of 2021. That's right, it has been just 1 week, and we've already seen monumental change for everyone in Greater Boston and across the nation. Today, it's official. Mr. Walsh goes to Washington, opening up a mayoral race here.
For Secretary of Labor, I nominate a good friend and a stand-up guy, Marty Walsh of Boston.
Yesterday, condemnation of President Trump came swiftly.
The whole thing makes me sick. Yesterday's riot was a dark moment for our country, made even more depressing by the president's role leading up to it and his wholly inadequate and appalling response to the violence.
That for the armed insurrection on Wednesday as pro-Trump extremists occupied the U.S. Capitol. On Tuesday, Boston paused its reopening again amidst a post-holiday coronavirus surge.
We've seen a pretty steady rising of numbers every single day for the last, let's say, almost 2 months now. We are getting to a point where it's getting very dangerous.
And on Monday, the State House, under its first new speaker in over a decade, made major moves on COVID-19 economic relief, housing, transit. And that's not even everything. 1 week of 2021 down, 51 to go. So let's dive in. With us to do that is Tito Jackson, CEO of Verdant Medical, a cannabis company, a former Boston City Councilor and a 2017 candidate for mayor, and Tom Nichols. He is a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, and the Harvard Extension School, and a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Tito, Tom, welcome back to both of you.
Good to be back.
Let's just make sure I've got Tito there, too. Tito, do I have you? Okay, I'm sure they'll get us Tito's sound back in just a second. Tom, great to have you. And listeners, listen, we are going to start with all things mayor, and we invite you to join the conversation. How are you reacting to Marty Walsh going to Washington to serve in the Biden administration? What will happen in a wide open mayoral race now? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. That's how you join the conversation. Tom, they'll let us know when Tito joins us. So let me start by asking you, were you surprised or did you think Joe Biden was ultimately going to pick Mayor Marty Walsh to serve as labor secretary?
Well, I wasn't surprised. I mean, Marty Walsh has been a star in the Democratic Party for a while, kind of a reliable deliverer rather than a celebrity. But I was a little distracted because of the other New Englanders that are getting recruited to go to Washington down here in Rhode Island. So
you are.
Wasn't surprised.
You want to fill in everyone, Tom, about who you're distracted by? Who's going in front of Rhode Island?
Well, that would be Governor Raimondo, Gina, to Rhode Islanders, who is heading down to become Secretary of Commerce.
That's right. And Vice President, former Vice President, President-elect Joe Biden announced both of them officially. We heard statements from both of them just a little more than an hour ago. Tito Jackson, sounds like we have you back.
Yes, I am back and happy to be here.
Great to have you. So, Tito, I want to start with you, and I'm just going to be a stinker, Tito. We asked you a couple of months ago. You were on a week in review shortly after Boston City Councilor Michelle Wu announced that she was running for mayor. You have run for mayor before. We asked you if you were thinking about doing it again. Right now, it seems like many people are thinking about doing it again. So is it back on your mind? Do you think you might run for mayor again?
What's on my mind is getting my businesses open and also complimenting the elevation of Mayor Walsh. I think he's done a very strong job, in particular in the time of COVID. I think there is a strong field, and I look forward to seeing who is going to move forward.
So, Tito, before I go back to Tom, just one more question on that. You just said, I look forward to seeing who's going to move forward. What's the thought process going through people's heads right now if they are considering entering the race? What kind of phone calls are they making? What are they thinking about?
So one of the critical components and one of the things that I had to deal with running, I got 35% of the vote with $350,000. And I believe Mayor Walsh spent about $5.2 million. So one, financial support, and then also political support from elected officials, community members, and members who are movers and shakers in and around the city is absolutely critical. Unlike the federal seats, the city of Boston is a large town, and so it's critical to gain support with real people, not only those individuals who have titles, but people who have the relationships on the ground in the community to be able to plug in. In addition, the difference here is when Mayor Walsh actually goes to Washington. If he goes before March, that means that it will be a special election within 120 to 150 days. If not, counselor slash mayor to be, my friend Kim Janey will serve out the full term.
Tito, I think it might be 140 days, 120 to 140 days.
I was extending it. Sorry about that.
No, that's quite all right. And I do know that one of the Boston City Councilors today, I believe Councilor Arroyo, did file some paperwork to try to keep there from being a special election so that there wouldn't be two elections in the city of Boston in a single year. We don't know yet where that's going to go. Before we go further into the mayoral race, Tom Nichols, I do want to ask you, part of the story here seems to be that Joe Biden has chosen someone from organized labor, and that hasn't happened, I believe, in more than half a century. What does that signal about the Biden administration, and how important is it to have someone who's been in a union as labor secretary?
Well, looking at this from outside of Democratic circles, and I also have to remind people I don't speak for the Naval War College, I actually don't see it as a labor pick. I think what Biden's been doing has been making low-key, high-competence picks. When Biden was elected, of course, you know, the entire online world and Democratic activists all wanted celebrities, to fill out the Biden administration, starting with all of the people Biden ran against. They did get one of those picks with Pete Buttigieg at transportation, which is usually not a particularly high profile appointment. But the rest of these have been people that have been proven administrators in other capacities. I think it's actually more important that Walsh and Raimondo were a mayor and a governor and that have actually run large organizations. Whether it'll matter that, you know, Marty Walsh came from a union, I think, and I am just guessing here from looking at the rest of Biden's appointments, that what he was really going for are people who have administrative competence and who, as I said earlier, you know, Mayor Walsh has been a reliable deliverer in the Democratic Party rather than kind of a quick, you know, flashy celebrity. And that to me is what the Biden administration looks like. And personally, I'm really glad for that.
That's a really interesting perspective, especially sort of the administrative competence. Listeners, join the conversation, both in your reactions to Mayor Walsh's nomination to be Labor Secretary and to who you think should throw their hat in the ring for the Boston mayoral race. Tito Jackson, I want to stay on this one more second. Yesterday on Radio Boston, we spoke with Congressman Stephen Lynch, and here is what he had to say about Mayor Walsh as Labor Secretary.
How great is it that we have someone being nominated as Secretary of Labor who actually stood in an unemployment line? In times like this, with so many people out of work because of the pandemic and people struggling, you know, sometimes the times find the person. And, what we're going through here, Marty Walsh is just eminently qualified, not only from a skill set, but also from an emotional and compassion perspective. He knows what it is to struggle.
So there's Stephen Lynch talking about how he appreciates that the labor secretary should Walsh get confirmed, and he likely will with a Democratic Senate, that lived experience when you're controlling policy that has to do with people's lives is important. Tito, let's project that forward into the Boston mayoral race now. What's the lived experience that we're going to get from Kim Janey, who will serve, if the mayor is confirmed, as acting mayor because she's now the president of the Boston City Council? Oh, I think we may have lost Tito Jackson again. We're just not having good luck with sound today. Listeners, I do want you to remember, please, we are all virtual in the pandemic world, and it's just not as easy to keep all the sound together. Tom, I know you're in Rhode Island. Are you watching the Boston mayor's race? And what is your reaction to the fact that the city of Boston, should Kim Janey become acting mayor in Marty Walsh's departure, she'll become the first Black woman mayor, and that's a twofer. She will be the first woman mayor in the city of Boston and the first person of color as a mayor in the city of Boston.
Well, until the pandemic struck, of course, I was in Boston every week working. So, you know, and I went to school in Boston, and I, as I always remind people, even though I live in Rhode Island, I am a son of the Commonwealth. So it matters a lot to me what happens in Boston. And I think it's all to the good. I mean, change, you know, the New Englanders are not, you know, we're not usually known for our embracing of change. We're a kind of solid, steady group of people. But I think this is really important. I think that, you know, the city's changing, the region's changing. And I think the most interesting reaction will be that I think most people are going to look at this and say, well, of course she's the mayor. She's the president of the Boston City Council. Who else would it be? Which I think is, you know, really kind of the way to think about these as kind of the normal parts of our political and social life. And I think that's really encouraging. I also wanted to add that I think it's interesting, you know, but it really says something that Biden chose Walsh, because it's not like Joe Biden needs votes here. It's not like he needs to make some kind of political statement. You know, it's not like Boston was, you know, on a knife's edge in the last election, and he's shoring up support. I mean, obviously he made this choice because he feels very positively about Marty Walsh and thinks he'd be a good addition to the team. And that, you know, politically, it wasn't like he was trying to, you know, cover a base up here in New England where, you know, people were going to vote for Joe Biden no matter what. So I think that's another very positive aspect of this appointment.
Tito, do we have you back again?
Yes, you have me. Can you hear me?
I can. I'm glad to have you back. So I don't know if you were able to hear the question that I just threw to Tom, and he gave us a full answer there. So I'll add just a little bit to it. When you ran, had you won, you would have been the first Black mayor of Boston, with Kim Janey breaking through the barriers, with women of color already as candidates in this mayoral race. Are we poised for huge change in the city of Boston? And what can that mean for the people of Boston?
One, I want to give props to Councilor Janey, soon to be Mayor Janey. It is significant that Boston is one of two cities over 400,000 that has never had a mayor of color in since our existence. It's Boston and Indianapolis, and that's about to change. And I think that should not be lost on folks. I also believe it is critical that when we give this connection of lived experience to Mayor Walsh, I think it is critical that we give the connection of lived experience to a person of color in a city that Black people are worth $8 and white families are worth $247,500 in a city that has
net wealth.
And net worth. And then in a city that from Roxbury to Back Bay, there's a 33-year difference in life expectancy. So these components around how do we close these gaps? How do we look forward to individuals who are going to support the Boston Public Schools living up to their true potential? And then also, how are we going to have a real conversation about how we use the base of spending in the city to make sure that we get above the 0.5% mark, which is the amount that women and people of color actually procure in terms of services out of that kind of $600 million pot. So we have a lot of work to do in the city and Boston as a whole, and I look forward to seeing that work discussed, debated, and implemented in this next mayoral election and with the next mayor of the city of Boston. It is now time for Boston to live out its real meaning and live up to our full potential.
Let's get a listener call on this. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Chris is on the line from Jamaica Plain. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I just so glad to hear Tito's voice. I supported him, and I'm looking forward to having a campaign where people continue to share the values and policy priorities that Tito just outlined. I think ultimately we also need to have the system is so the mayor has so much power in the system and the council has such little power. We need to look at how to share that so that citizens really can get what they need. And so I'm looking forward to who Tito, if Tito will choose to endorse who that might be. That'll make a big difference to me.
Thanks for that. Chris, any responses to Chris, Tito?
Well, one, I want to thank Chris for his vote. I want to just underscore what Chris is talking about. We have to have folks who are going to deal with not only the folks in the largest and tallest buildings and those folks who are making it, but how do we become a city for those folks in the middle and those folks who haven't made it? How do we deal with the issues around homelessness, which abound, but also the fact is there are tens of thousands of people who haven't paid their rent since March. What are we going to do as a city to actually deal with those very real issues? And it's going to have to come as a group and not only as the individuals at the top, but those individuals in the middle and the bottom actually having voice.
Let's grab one more call on this. We've got Luca on the line from Winchester. Luca, go ahead.
Hi, this is, can you hear me?
Yep, go right ahead.
So I just want to say about the nomination of Mayor Walsh that it makes me very proud to be from this part of the country, that it's important to see our local leaders going up to the national level. And also I think it's very important to see a person who knows what they're doing in labor being the labor secretary. And I'm very proud to see all that happen, especially with someone from Boston.
Thanks for that call, Luca. And Tom Nichols, before we go to break, I'll bring it back to you. You know, you alluded to this at the beginning of our conversation, that Joe Biden and his incoming administration are bringing a lot of talent and brain power from New England. What does that say about us, and what will it mean for our region in this new administration?
Tiziana, I love a softball like that, and I'll just... because we New Englanders,
all for you, Tom.
It's because we New Englanders are just that good. That's why. I think you know, to a more political answer, a more politically contextual context, is that you know, and I say this as somebody outside of the Democratic parties in New England, as I'm sure some of the listeners know, I'm a former Republican, a Lincoln Project, Never Trump guy. But even I think New Englanders really have a real sense of moderation when it comes to the ability to kind of roll our sleeves up and get things done. When I worked in the State House, I was, one of those moderate Republicans that other Republicans in other parts of the country didn't much care for. And I worked for a Democrat. I was a registered Republican working for a Democratic chairman on Commerce and Labor, a really good guy named Ken Lemansky. And we are friends, and he is still a mentor to this day. That's how we do things here. And I think that's part of our culture. I think it's part of our kind of inherent sensibility. And so, you know, I think it shouldn't be surprising that someone who ran on a message of national unity the way Biden did is reaching out to people who, you know, come from a region that I think, you know, again, to put in a free advertisement for New England, I think I'm from a region where, you know, quiet professionalism and the ability to get things done, you know, is part of our political culture. That doesn't mean we don't have, you know, crazy right-wing conservatives, and it doesn't mean we have full-throated progressives, but I think most of us are pretty sensible, you know, working, you know, people with good working relationships.
Before we get into D.C., I just want to note one thing that we're not going to talk about because there's been so much news this week, which were historic victories in the Georgia Senate race on Tuesday, where newly elected senators Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff tipped the Senate to the Democrats. Raphael Warnock became the state's first black senator. John Ossoff became the state's first Jewish senator. I just want to note that in a different week, we'd also be talking about that, but it became eclipsed by the events that unfolded on Wednesday. Tom, how would you describe what happened Wednesday?
sedition, insurrection incited by the sitting president of the United States, who called for a mob to march on and assault another branch of the United States government.
That- Tito, how would you frame it?
I would say all of the things that Tom said, but in addition, I would also concur with Joy Reid that this also was about, in particular, white males who knew that they weren't going to have the police as well as individuals hold them to account. This was an attempted coup, and these are domestic terrorists. This is not, I've been a demonstrator. This was not a demonstration, and it was not motivated by ideals, but really was motivated simply to underscore a failed presidency. And go ahead.
No. Well, it's just, Tito, we happen to actually have what Joy Reid said. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to play it for you.
That's
right,
even
here.
Better.
They know that they are not in jeopardy, because the cops are taking selfies with them, walking them down the steps to make sure they're not hurt. White Americans aren't afraid of the cops, even when they're committing insurrection. And the police reflect back to them, we're with you. You're good. We're not going to hurt you, because you're not them. Guarantee you, if that was a Black Lives Matter protest in D.C., there would already be people shackled, arrested, or dead.
So I want to come back to you, Tito, but since we had it, I wanted to sort of give you the assist there.
Well, I appreciate the bounce pass. She, you know, you stammered through the beginning of this, Tiziana, but you should not have to ever say that we had an armed insurrection at the Capitol building in the of the United States. Those words shouldn't flow off of your tongue. And so the reason why they don't flow off smoothly is because this is something that should never happen in our democracy. And in addition to what, you know, Joy Reid said, as a Black man, I know there's no way that I could ever get that close to the Capitol, in particular with the Black Lives Matter rallies that I've been at. There are perimeters that are set hundreds of thousands of feet away from large buildings. And we know that if it was people of color, there would have been many more deaths, that many 13 people arrested as federal crimes were committed at this federal building. This is a reckoning. This is a fork in the road in the United States of America. And we must seize the day, seize the time to make this moment one that we actually truly understand these issues of white privilege, these issues of the structural integrity that we need to bring back and to deal with this. The last piece I'll say is, this is America. Stop saying, this is not America, this is not who we are. This is America waking up in the morning with the nasty stuff that you have in your eyes and the slob that you have coming down your cheek. This is us when we're not pretty, and it's exactly who we are, and we need to make sure that we wipe our face and put our makeup on and get right, but we have to deal with who and what we are right now.
Tiziana, can I just add something? I used to work in the U.S. Senate. I had floor privileges there. I was one of the people that you see walking around in the well. You know, I was a senior aide to a senior senator. I, you know, sat behind his desk with him. I was one, like I said, was one of those people you saw coming in and out. And you, Joy and Tito and all of you are absolutely right. This is a place that normally is buttoned down tight. And these people had no fear. They just assumed that no one would even think to shoot them. And I'll just point out that a few years back, I went back to the Senate chamber. I was visiting with a friend, and I wanted to show her where I'd worked. And of course, I didn't have my badge. I know I'm no longer a Senate staff guy. And I reached for the door to the chamber, and the guard got up and almost drew on me because I wasn't where I was supposed to be. And I was reaching for the door to the actual chamber, even though they weren't even in session. And I was just one middle-aged guy with a middle-aged female friend. And the guard got up and actually started to, you know, put a hand on his hip. I am still appalled that these people just thought, you know, we'll just walk in and destroy everything, when I spent a lot of time in that chamber knowing that you can't do that. And if this had been not, if these had been black protesters or Muslim protesters or anybody but a bunch of, you know, white guys, I think there would have been a lot more, there would have been a lot more carnage spread around there.
I'm going to say, and not in any way to undermine your message, I am going to note there is one person who attempted to get into the Capitol building who was shot and who did die. But as you say, and as we've heard repeatedly over the last 3 days, the law enforcement response, the Capitol Police response, was neither anything like what we saw over the summer, nor like we have come to expect for security around federal buildings.
And she was crawling through, she was crawling through a broken window. At the time. I mean, that doesn't mean she should have been shot. I'm just, you know, this was a mob storming the Capitol, and it's remarkable that more people weren't hurt. But I think the point that they all thought that they could just do this and get away with it is something that we shouldn't lose sight of.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to the phones. Tito, do you have one more point you want to add there? Go ahead.
No, and they did get away with it to the point where airlines had to shut down, you know, drinking privileges and the like. People had fun and walked away, went back to their families, and they're okay. When there are multiple folks in Black Lives Matter rallies who are holding children who got pepper sprayed, who got arrested,
absolutely,
and some who got shot. We have to reckon with that as a country. And if people don't understand what white privilege is, go back and look at the video.
All right, I want to go to the phones here, 800-423-8255. We've got Christine on the line from Pittsburgh, actually. Christine, go ahead.
Hello. I wanted to ask Professor Tom, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, I can.
Hi. I wanted to ask Professor Tom Nichols his opinion on the impeachment proceedings, how they'll go, because I was reading George Conway's Twitter, and I know he knows George Conway, the fellow Lincoln Project advisor, and he said he thinks they would have the votes to impeach. But then I read where this congressman or senator, Mr. Blount, said it's not going to happen, there's no way. So what is his opinion? And I just want to say that at Radio Free Tom is one of the best things on Twitter.
That's Tom's Twitter handle. There you go. All right, Tom, Christine, thanks for calling in. Tom, you got a fan call in there. Do you want to answer Christine's question?
I'm following you from now on, Tom. I got you.
There you go. There you go, Tito.
As God is my witness, I didn't plant that call. thank you very much. And I really appreciate that. Just 2 days ago in USA Today, I wrote a piece saying the president has to be impeached, and he has to be impeached right now. And I have a second piece. I'm also a contributing writer at The Atlantic, and I have a piece coming out shortly that argues that it is just too dangerous to leave Trump in the White House even for another 10 or 12 days. So, you know, when it comes to impeachment, you know, I am among the tribe that wants the president impeached again and impeached right now. Blount, of course, the Republicans in the Senate are going to tell you they don't have the votes because they will do anything not to have to go on the record again. Having to acquit Trump the first time obliterated a lot of the credibility and even a lot of votes for a lot of them. I don't know. You know, I mean, George is a really smart observer on this stuff. Whether the votes are there in the Senate, I don't know. I would hope they are. But the votes are certainly there in the House. I mean, they can pass the articles of impeachment. The question is, can they get 2/3 in the Senate? But I don't think that should be the rule for doing it. I think they should do it and get on with it and get on with it right now.
So speaking of the House, Assistant Speaker of the House Catherine Clark spoke to Politico today, and she said that if the reports are true that Vice President Mike Pence is not going to move to invoke the 25th Amendment, which would be the other practical option for removing the current president from office prior to Inauguration Day, then, Tom, as you say, the House will act. Here she is.
Donald Trump needs to be removed from office, and we are going to proceed with every tool that we have to make sure that that happens to protect our democracy. We will move forward with impeachment. We know that we have limited time, but that every day that Donald Trump is president of the United States is a day of grave danger.
Tito Jackson, the Massachusetts congressional delegation in both the House and the Senate has been swift and vocal since Wednesday, condemning these actions, condemning the president for his role in these actions, and calling for removal of the president. How powerful is our delegation's voice in bringing this forward? We know how high ranking. I mean, Catherine Clark is Assistant Speaker of the House. How much can the Massachusetts delegation move the needle here?
I believe the Massachusetts delegation is leading and not following in this regard. I think they are doing exactly what we need to happen. And I agree with Tom that this must happen. This president has when a private company, Twitter or Facebook, has to do what parents do with their teenagers, which is take away their Twitter and Facebook. That is an absolute new low because of the incitement of essentially riots based on this president. He could do anything. He could start a war. There are so many things that could go wrong, and it is now time for people to actually step up and lead. And understanding that these quote unquote moderates, get your butt on the record. And I think Tom is absolutely right. This isn't whether or not you have the votes or not. I'm going to make you go on record and tell us that this is okay to allow this individual who is not well to continue to run this country. We must have people step up and lead and put folks on the spot.
Just to make the New England point, one of the other people who's been leading this has been as an ocean stater, I have to bring this up. David Cicilline of Rhode Island has been one of the people. Congressman Cicilline has been also taking the lead on an impeachment articles as of the past day. So,
yeah, and he was vocal early, vociferously and early as well. I do want to take a minute now before we go to a break and change gears again to talk about the future of the Republican Party. And as much as possible, you guys know I try to bring this home. I try to bring this home to the Commonwealth. We know that U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling has said that those from the Commonwealth who went to D.C. with the intent to participate in the violence will be prosecuted. We're hearing something similar from Attorney General Maura Healey today. We're also hearing dismay, I think, from Republicans around the country in their home states who didn't go, who were not participating in a violent attack on the U.S. Capitol, and who are concerned about being painted with a broad brush. What is the message to and the need for action in the Massachusetts Republican Party now, Tito Jackson?
It is critical that Republicans choose people and country over party. For so long, we've heard Republicans stand idly by or underscore and vote with and have the back of this president. If you can't see today that this president does not have the back of the American people, then you know what? The party doesn't really matter. And so it is now critical that Republicans actually take a stand, have a backbone when it comes to this person who is said to be part of their party. And I know as a former elected official, when there's an issue that happens in the black community, something really unique happens, Tiziana. They call you and ask you about what's the black response to what so-and-so said. Well, you know what? I want to know what the Republican response is to what so-and-so said, and this so-and-so is Donald Trump and what he did, and what are you doing to counter that response? We have to hold people to account. And, you know, in all honesty, you know, the days, the Weld Republicans and the like, John McCain's and the like, you know, there's some disagreements that I had, but those are individuals that didn't have to be disagreeable. This is really a clarion call to the Republican Party. Will you be relevant in the future or will you not be relevant in the future?
And Tom Nicholas is a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. I'm going to go out on a call, but before I do, do you have a note you want to sound alongside that before we go out to a call and a break?
Absolutely. I am tired of Republicans around the country expressing their shock and dismay at what other Republicans are doing. They have helped to create this by not speaking out against it. Just today, Ronna McDaniel was reelected as the chairman of the Republican National Committee. She is one of Trump's most reliable enablers. She has been one of the people who helped to create the situation we're in. Massachusetts Republicans really feel that strongly about what's going on, they can break with the national committee. They can say that we are the party that follows people like Charlie Baker, not Ronna McDaniel. Unless they do that, their protestations mean.
We lost your last. Your last word there, Tom. Unless said, you were until leaving they, yourself out. Yeah.
No, okay. No. I said until they do that. Their feeble protestations mean nothing unless they are willing to break with the national committee. Then I'm not interested in their whining about how they're being tarred with a broad brush.
All right, I'm going to take a call and we're going to go to a break. So Oboe's calling from Townsend. Oboe, you get last word on this. Please be brief.
Well, I'm not unfortunately. Mr. Jackson and Mr. Nichols raised the point that I was going to make eloquently. Trump's behavior is intolerable, but the Republican Party, going back to Reagan, have equated race with economy. They have allowed this to happen. They are just as culpable, and just as the protesters were allowed to walk out, Ted Cruz, who raised money during the lockdown, is also going to walk away unscathed. And that's what I find most upsetting. Mr. Nichols
Thanks,
was just
Oboe.
Talking about the Republican chair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we're going to take it back from you there, Oboe. Thank you. We're shifting gears now to talk about the surge in coronavirus cases, the state of the vaccine rollout, and some news from Governor Baker today about testing in schools. So we want to get your thoughts. How are we handling the pandemic? How are you feeling about the surge that we're in? What comes next? Are you feeling hopeful or are you still feeling overwhelmed? 800-423-8255, again, to join the conversation. Tito Jackson, I think I will start with you, and I'm simply going to ask you, did you think about the virus this week? I think we lost Tito again. Tom, do I have you?
You do. I'm here.
Okay. So, Tom, how about you? Did you think about the virus this week as other things were unfolding?
Yes.
Hello.
There's Tito.
Hey.
I did, because we hit a new record, and I think it's evidence again of, you know, not just here, and I think, you know, this is something that we have to grapple with as a society. It's not just a failure of government at the highest level because of Donald Trump, but it's a failure of people in a lot of parts of the United States. I'm here in Rhode Island. We're in a situation, and I still run into people who just chin strap.
So, Tom, I'm going to stop
toddlers.
You there. Unfortunately, Tom, unfortunately, we're getting breaks in your line. So now that we have Tito solidly back, I'm going to send you back to the control room. We'll see if we can get your line cleared up, and we'll bring you back on air. So, Tito Jackson, so Wednesday we broke a record in the United States with more than 3,900 deaths in a single day. Yesterday, the Commonwealth posted more than 7,000 new cases. Both Mayor Marty Walsh and Governor Charlie Baker extended rollbacks this week. Most recently, Governor Baker extending his through at least January 24th. Are we at a public policy level doing everything we should be doing right now here in the Commonwealth?
I think we're being very aggressive. I think we need to understand what's happening on a day-to-day basis. And I know that Mayor Walsh, as well as the governor, on a daily basis, give briefings and get information. We can't take a one track. We have to modify on a day-to-day basis. I think about this every day because I actually had corona in March, and I still have a great deal of fatigue left over from the coronavirus, and you know, I push through that on a day-to-day basis, and so it's something that's real. I also think that we need to make sure that we're getting as many people as humanly possible vaccinated, and I think it's critical that vaccinations happen in particular in communities of color, and we continue to educate folks around the fact that the virus is something that we should get. I will be the first in line when I'm actually able to get it, because I never ever want to feel like that before.
I think you meant the vaccine is something you should get, right? You said you said the virus is something we should get.
The vaccine. I do not want any of y'all to get the virus. I'm sorry. The vaccine is something that we should get.
Tito, I didn't know it's still affecting you all these months later.
The issue, yeah, so you have some remnants around the issue of fatigue. is one of the things. And I also have some friends who have issues that actually really affect their heart. So there are some issues that continue to lag, as and we're told even a up to a year out in terms of this disease state. So please, I just beg of folks to understand, coronavirus is real. It affects people. It kills people. And I never ever want any of you to feel what I felt as I sat watching the number of people dying with the same thing that I had. It was one of the most difficult things that I've ever faced. So please continue to protect yourself. Please wear masks. And we will have more time than ever after all of this to party. And no, everyone knows I like to have fun just as much as anybody else. But I want each of you to be around. I don't want to have any more memorials, which I've lost several friends from this virus. Please be aware and stay woke.
So Tom Nichols, you know, with Tito's voice still ringing in our heads, on Monday, I think I thought one of the big stories of this week was going to be vaccine rollouts. And I'm thinking about what you said earlier in the show when you praised President-elect Joe Biden for bringing competent administrators from the New England area into his administration, one of those being Governor Raimondo. We know that nationally, Governor Charlie Baker has also received high marks up until now for his handling of the pandemic here. The federal government so far seems to have taken an approach that is, hey, this is the state's problem. This is the state's to address. This is the state's. They need to take leadership. They need to do the problem solving. Has that been the right approach? And do we expect to see the same thing? Will Rhode Island and Massachusetts be in that same position, let's say, 2 months from now?
Well, I'm going to push back on one way that you phrase things, Tiziana, and I'm going to say the federal government didn't take that position. There are a lot of good people working throughout the health and medical communities in the federal government who have been working their hearts out trying to stop this pandemic. The Trump administration took the position that this is the state's problem because all they cared about was whether or not this pandemic was going to affect the political fortunes of one Donald J. Trump. That's all they cared about. And, you know, the president himself has gone AWOL on this, left this issue behind a long time ago. But I think, as I was saying earlier before, you know, foreign sabotage kept cutting off my mic.
mine too.
You know, we have to take responsibility as a society. I mean, even here in New England, you know, I think we've been really pretty good about this. I still see people, you know, like toddlers putting their mask under their chin, like defiant children walking around glaring at people with this attitude that says, you can't tell me what to do. We have to do this. And one of the things that I love about being a New Englander is that we have that real sense of community, that we do shoulder burdens together, and that, you know, we do just kind of, you know, accept these things as kind of sensible measures. And I think as long as people are going to reject that, we're still going to have, you know, record numbers of death. I never thought that we'd be approaching 400,000. I mean, I was shocked when we got to 100,000. Now I'm thinking that the people that have been projecting 500,000 probably know the country better than I do. But it doesn't have to be this way.
I want to pick up one call here. We've got Mary on the line from Lexington. Mary,
yes.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mary.
Hello?
Hi. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, hi. So I'm a senior citizen, and I am interested as to the rollout of the vaccine. I have friends and family in Georgia and in Louisiana, and senior citizens are allowed to go to pharmacies currently and get the vaccine. No wait, no problem. When's that going to happen in Massachusetts?
Thanks for that call, Mary. And just some information for folks. The CDC produced guidelines. Different states made their choices about how they were going to structure their vaccine rollouts. Sometime within the last week to 10 days, Governor Charlie Baker did announce that he was moving senior citizens aged 75 and older into a higher priority category within phase two, along with people who have comorbidities. So the Commonwealth has changed recently when older adults age 75 and older are going to be able to get the vaccine, but they are not in phase one. So Tito Jackson, just briefly, are we structuring this right, do you think? Our plan for who's getting vaccinated when and how we're going to get that done?
And I think first responders and those individuals who are essential employees, in particular in healthcare, have to be at the top tier. Because those individuals are folks that we need on the front line. I also agree with your caller that those individuals who are seniors should go first. And those are the individuals who are more likely to pass away from this disease state. So I am happy to hear that Governor Baker is taking a leadership role in that regard, in addition to those individuals who have comorbidities. And so this is exactly how we should do it. And I stress that, as Tom noted, that the federal government needs to step up and actually help states more, providing funding as well as additional resources. That is what our federal government is there to do, and is actually a critical component.
So I want to just pick up on that last thing you said, Tito, and Tom Nichols, I'll turn to you. We've got about a minute left before we have to start to wrap. Do we have the funding we need in Massachusetts and Rhode Island to stand up the level of testing, the level of tracking, and the level of vaccination capacity that are urgent for the next 4 to 5 months to bring this virus to heel?
I'm not an expert on healthcare funding, and but the question I would ask as a former state house worker is, do we have the infrastructure to be able to deliver those vaccines? Because money without some kind of infrastructure to put it into doesn't help you very much. Cash does not solve your problem. It's the ability to set up testing stations. It's the ability to deliver and store vaccines, which means things like trucks and cold storage and things like that. So if I were a legislator, exercising oversight to ask how we're doing, those are the questions I'd actually be doing, because you can always find the money. You can appropriate that money. You can figure out how to move cash around within the state. But the question is, can you spend that cash in a way that actually delivers the vaccine? That's one of the concerns I have here in Rhode Island, because I'm worried about the infrastructure to actually get the vaccine delivered where it's needed.
All right. Well, we are going to have to end on that note, because it's the end of the week and the end of the hour. We were just hearing from Tom Nichols, a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, and at the Harvard Extension School, and Tito Jackson, CEO of Verdant Medical, a cannabis company, and a former Boston City Councilor. Thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to have you both. And thank you, listeners, for listening. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. I hope you have a great weekend, and I hope you will tune in again Monday for more Radio Boston.